Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to God. If you're ever in the Madison area, we'd love for you to stop by and study the Bible with us on Sundays at 5 p.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. If you have questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, you can find us online at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as well as our sermons podcast, Madison Church of Christ Sermons. Thanks again for stopping by. I hope this study is a blessing to you.
Hello, hello. How is everybody? I'm glad that you're here and glad we all made it. We've got some awesome ladies speaking tonight, as usual, and we're so thankful for them doing this, and they coordinated their outfits so well. Thank you for that. I'm going to read the bios for Emma Houts and Laura Wade. Do y'all have a certain order you want to go in? She's going first. Okay. So Emma Houts, she's originally from Florence, Alabama, and grew up going to Stony Point Church of Christ. She moved here in June when she and Matthew got married. She's new to Madison. She teaches kindergarten here at MKC and does awesome with that. She absolutely loves her job. Since she moved here, she's loved getting involved at Madison. She is now over Flourish Groups and the CYP Girls. I did not know that you were over CYP Girls. That's awesome. Both of these have been such a huge blessing to her already. She said, Matthew and I are also FAM group leaders over the seventh graders with Emily and Andrew Wright. We love being involved, and we are so blessed with such a loving and caring church. Thank you, Emma. And then Laura Wade. Laura and David have been married for 30 years. They have been here at Madison for 21 years, where they have raised their five children, Samuel, Anna, Ben, Elliot, and Lydia. She's also been recently blessed with two daughters-in-law, Kelsey and Ellie. Laura is wrapping up her 17th year of homeschooling, and she also teaches biology to their homeschool group. In her spare time, she enjoys watching her kids play sports, traveling, and working with the youth group, who has nicknamed her Mama Wade. Her favorite ladies' ministry is her Flourish group, the Spice Girls, who've been hanging out together now for 3 years. That's so good. So awesome.
All right. Who likes to wait? Waiting at the doctor's office? Not me. Waiting in standstill traffic? Definitely not me. I'm getting used to that here at Madison. Waiting on your car to be fixed. I do not enjoy that. Waiting in line behind a person with a million things at Walmart. Whew, not me. Whew. Waiting on an Amazon package to arrive that you've been waiting on for days. Again, not me. Waiting in a drive-thru line when you're waiting on that yummy ice cream. Not me. Waiting is hard at times. As most of you know, I teach kindergarten here at church, and I wouldn't be true to myself if I didn't tie in a kindergarten book. So we will be reading a snippet from Dr. Seuss's book called The Waiting Place. So it's his Oh, the Places You'll Go. For people just waiting. Waiting for a train to go, or a bus to come, or a plane to go, or the mail to come, or the rain to go, or the phone to ring, or the snow to snow, or waiting around for yes or no, or waiting for their hair to grow. Everyone is just waiting. Waiting for the fish to bite, or waiting for wind to fly a kite, or waiting around for Friday night, or waiting perhaps for their Uncle Jake, or a pot to boil, or a better break, or a string of pearls, or a pair of pants, or a wig with curls, or another chance. Everyone is just waiting. 1 Samuel 1 and 2 talks about a lady that was waiting and had been waiting for a long time, Hannah. Let's read together 1 Samuel 1, 10 through 18. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the afflictions of your servant and remember me, and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. As she continued praying before the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved and her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli took her to be a drunken woman. Eli said to her, "How long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you." But Hannah answered, "No, my lord, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I am not drunk, neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for all along I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation." Then Eli answered, "Go in peace, and the Lord of Israel grant your petition that you have made to him." And she said, "Let your servant find favor in your eyes." Then the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Hannah goes on to have a son named Samuel. During Hannah's waiting, she was bullied by Peninnah, her husband's other wife. I cannot imagine sharing my husband, much less being bullied by the other lady. I just couldn't even handle that. During the time of waiting, Hannah wept bitterly, would not eat. She was sad, deeply distressed, and had great anxiety and frustration during her waiting for a baby. She went through this for years of waiting. She poured her heart out to God, so much so that Eli thought she was drunk because she was praying so hard and deeply. No words were coming out of her mouth, but her mouth was moving. In 1 Samuel 1:20, Hannah says, "I have asked for him from the Lord." Then when you skip down to verse 27, she says, "For this child I prayed." Hannah prayed and waited for years for a son, and she never gave up. She kept praying, and I love this about Hannah. The story of Hannah is so relatable to me in so many ways, and I'm going to share two personal ways that Hannah's story has moved me. Now, please bear with me if I cry. I've never spoken in front of this many women before. Every time I've practiced it or, like, gone over it, I have bawled my eyes out. So I have tissues. I'm prepared. So my entire life, there's two things I've always wanted to be: a wife and a mommy. I've dreamed of both of these titles my entire life. When people ask me if I have baby fever, I always respond, "I've had it my entire life." I've always wanted to be a mommy and a wife. During high school, I never dated or went on a date. I was either playing sports, babysitting, or just being a kid. During high school, I started writing letters to my future husband, and I would pray for him. I couldn't wait to know who he was. The summer after high school, I went on my very first date of my life, right here in Huntsville. But let me tell you, it was memorable, all right, but not in a good way. We went to go jump on a trampoline with this guy's siblings. I miraculously fell off, broke my right wrist, twisted both bones around, and I cracked both my elbows. Talk about a first date. I could tell the whole story another time, but to keep it short, I did end up in the ER, obviously, and his poor mother, who I had never met, had to undress me and put me in a gown. It was horrible. And I'm Miss Modest USA. I about died. Also, I had to take a pregnancy test, too. That's unrelated, because when you're in a hospital, have a scan. Thank you. Yeah, you have to take a pregnancy test on my first date of my life. It was absolutely horrible. I should have taken the hint right then, at that night, that it was a bad start to a relationship, because I would have saved myself so much hurt. As time went on, it got really bad. My parents kept telling me that what they were seeing wasn't normal, but they didn't realize how bad it was. And some of it I didn't realize until I was out of it. I was manipulated, talked down upon, verbally abused, cheated on, and so much more. But praise the Lord, it ended. Then several months later, I got into my second relationship. But this one lasted a lot longer, and it went south fast. My parents and sister begged me to open my eyes because this wasn't healthy. Again, if they only knew how bad it really was. I was again abused, beyond manipulated, talked awful to, and so much more. I even once had to jump out of a moving car for my own safety. It was bad. Not at all what I wanted in a husband. Thankfully, it ended, and I was so beyond worn down, I didn't know who I was anymore. I had to relearn how to function after several years of being manipulated and abused in a terrible relationship. Thanks to God for being with me during those hard times. I am super thankful my mom helped me find a counselor. I literally can't recommend counseling enough. Y'all, I'm a basket case already. We're just getting started. But I was so broken for a while. I started mending and healing, but I was absolutely terrified to date for years. I prayed to God about my future husband, and I wrote him letters often. I'd come to the conclusion after almost 5 years of waiting that it was okay I was single. It was okay that I was not where I thought I was going to be in life at this point. So I started shopping. I started buying stuff for a future house that I didn't even own. And I found my spark. I found who I was. I was a much better and improved Emma. And even though I was single and okay, I did long for my husband. I had waited for so long. Fast forward to June 2022. I am literally living my best life. I had just left a bad school that I worked at, and I was hired by my dream school, my alma mater. I was about to also go visit my cousin in Switzerland. I was living the life. It was great. While I was in Switzerland, my precious sister and my dear friend had been communicating, and my friend Esther texted my sister wanted to know if I was single. And my sister, being her, immediately, no hesitation, sent an entire dating profile about me with pictures. I still to this day have no idea what it was. And she wanted me to find a man really, really bad. I, on the other hand, am absolutely clueless as what's going on. I'm on the other side of the world, just living my best life. When I got back from Switzerland, my sister informed me while I was sitting on the toilet with the worst case of jet lag, that there's a man that's going to text me, and his name was Matthew, in the next day or so. The next day was my first day working at my new school for a teacher in-service day, and I had been on the job for exactly 5 minutes when I got a text from a random number. And I couldn't respond. I'm new. I'm like literally the freshest teacher at the school. And so I did the next best thing, and I went to the bathroom to respond. We started texting. I felt this was going good, but I was scared. Our first date, I truly don't know how I did not scare him away. I told Matthew how I will not put up with anything and my biggest goals in life, and that if he didn't like those things, then I was not the girl to date. And I told him straight, I did not want to go through the heartache and emotional trauma I had done before. Things were going really good, and I liked him a lot. I started back to school, and I taught at a private Christian school is where I had gone to. So our first chapel lesson, working at my dream job, and now dating Matthew, was on Hannah. I sat there and cried my eyes out like I'm about to do right now. And talk about really odd looks you get when you're the brand new teacher and you're sobbing on the first day of school. Not a good look. But it was not that I was sad. It was that I knew that God had heard my prayers like Hannah. And I cannot describe to you the feeling when you see God answering your prayers before your eyes. As you know, God blessed me far more than I can describe with my wonderful husband. Something super cool I got to do on our wedding was I got to give him the letters I had been writing to my future husband because they finally had a recipient to receive them all. Matthew is the answer to literally a bazillion prayers and so many letters to the Lord. And today, of all the days of the year, for me to speak and share part of my story happens to be my sweet husband's birthday. Here we go again, y'all. when I tell you God hears your prayers, just wait and see what he can do. Now, my story doesn't end there with Hannah. Before Matthew and I were married, I had started having some really, really bad pain. I had gone to my OBGYN to discover that I had a massive ovarian cyst that needed to be removed pretty quickly. I just thought, oh, I'll be better super fast. We're gonna get this out. I'll be back to new. I'll be back to school. It'll be easy breezy, lemon squeezy. Well, that's not at all what happened. While in surgery, they discovered a lot of other problems. And when I woke up from surgery, my precious parents, bless their hearts, they had to break the news to me that I had PCOS and endometriosis. The doctors had told my parents that if I wasn't 25 years old at the time, they would have removed everything. We were all devastated. My biggest dream in the world is to be a mommy, and it felt like it was being ripped away from me. I was completely shocked, but thank the Lord, since that day, I've been to lots of doctor's appointments, made a ton of lifestyle changes, and done lots of research on my condition. And I can bravely say that it's going to be okay, because I know God is with me and He hears my prayers. I know I will be a mother one day when we're ready to start a family. Tonight, if you're in a season of waiting, don't give up. Please know you're not alone. There's a ton of us in waiting seasons or have been in waiting seasons of life. Hannah's story has helped and continues to help me in my waiting season. Like Hannah, let's use our waiting seasons to draw closer to God. Thank you.
Well, you would think that Emma and I coordinated our lessons along with our outfits. Emma, we love you. I was not able to attend Ladies' Day last year where Laura Jenkins presented her book here, The Thought Garden. I did, however, get to read the teen version of her book in the chapter about the storms of life, and this quote really stuck out to me. I asked the Lord for flowers, and it started to rain. This really resonated with me. It could be because I'm a biology geek, teacher, or that it just really struck a nerve with me. Laura Jenkins explained how storms actually are beneficial for plants. And I'll spare you the detail of nitrogen fixation and all the, how it's good. But for now, let's just go with the thought that storms benefit plants, just like our storms of life. Storms are painful, but they can benefit us. John 16:13 says, "In the world, you will have tribulation." And here's the best part. These are red letters, words of our Savior. It continues, "But take heart, I have overcome the world." These storms come in lots of different forms for everyone. They're either physical, emotionally, illness of a loved one. And Casey, I don't know if you're here. Your lesson 2 weeks ago was fabulous. Personal illnesses, jobs, financial strains, parenting struggles. Unfortunately, our list of storms could just go on and on. Tonight, I want to talk to you about one of the storms called infertility. Oh, I can hear inside your head right now, infertility. And this is the lady who has that herd of kids that Lorianne just read off the list. Infertility is defined as the failure to achieve pregnancy after 12 months. David and I were on this journey for a little over 5 years. And statistics worldwide say that 1 in 6 families struggle with infertility. U.S. statistics are more like 1 in 7, but those numbers unfortunately are rising. In the U.S., 50% of infertility cases are female-related, 30% male-related, and a very frustrating 20% have unknown causes. So if the statistics hold true, and we look around this room, I would guess there's probably 10 to 15 of us who have either gone through this or are going through this. We have daily reminders. Take your temperature, fill out your charts, buy the ovulation kits, take your prenatal vitamins, cut your budget. Then you have the thoughts, what's wrong with me? Why am I being punished? Am I not being happy enough for all my friends who are having babies? Do I not pray enough? Am I not good enough? Well, it looks like we're in pretty good company. It's almost like the wall of fame up here. Infertility is not a punishment. We see sinful people have children too. We cannot earn children or any other blessing for that fact. God's not punishing you with infertility because of some past sin. We just have to come to grips that God never promises us a baby, and that's hard. What he does promise us, though, is that he'll never leave us and that he has good plans for us. Prayer needs to always be our first action, not a last resort for any storm that we go through. God hears every prayer and answers every prayer, sometimes with a yes, sometimes with a no, and sometimes with a wait. The promise was given to Abraham, and he had a wait. Why make them wait if he knew Isaac was going to be born anyway? And Abraham and Sarah, they waited a long time. And I think, this is Laura's opinion, that it was to show God's power. Do you think that Abraham and Sarah would have truly understood the power of the Lord and been convinced that God's power could do anything had they not waited? Maybe not. So let me introduce you to my kids. This picture was taken about 15 years ago. I just needed an older picture so you could see the age differences. I'm going to try to explain. Okay, this is Elliot. Okay, bear with me. Elliot's my oldest. Samuel in the brown, Anna in the gingerbread, and Lydia in the pink little snowman. Those are triplets. And Ben, y'all know him. He's now my bouncing baby, 6'2" boy. He's the youngest. And today's his birthday, too. So the name Samuel, I wasn't even going to bring this up until Emma brought it up. Before this child, I prayed. Samuel, even though he's moved out, there's still a little wooden sign by where his bed would be, and it says, "For this child, I have prayed," because I wanted to let him know every day that he was prayed for. All right, so how do I explain this weird age gap? Okay, so here we go. We started the journey with a couple of IUIs, which means intrauterine inseminations, and we had no luck. Then we started doing IVF cycles. We completed several fresh and frozen cycles over the next few years. IVF stands for in vitro fertilization. For those of you who don't know, that's when the sperm are allowed to fertilize the egg just in a petri dish, and then the embryo develops and is placed back into the mother a few days later. I'll spare you the details of all the shots, the pills, the surgeries, the doctor's appointments, blood work, ultrasounds, and all the other nonstop tests of each one of these cycles. Sometimes IVF gets a bad reputation among Christians, and it can stir up some controversy. And because of that and some other issues, sometimes we don't feel like we can talk to people freely about what's going on in our lives. I want to tell you, life begins at conception. And IVF, if done properly, can be a useful tool for Christians. We ask the doctors to only fertilize the number of eggs that we would be willing to carry. Using IVF or some of the other medical advances for infertility is not, quote-unquote, playing God. It would be just like taking chemotherapy or heart surgery. For time's sake, I can't get completely into our thought process with that, but if you have any questions, feel free to always talk to me anytime about that. Well, after a couple of years of those fresh and frozen IVF cycles, in the fall of 2000, we finally had a positive pregnancy test, only to discover that it was an ectopic pregnancy and the baby had passed away in my fallopian tube. Following the necessary repairs, we ended up having to move from San Antonio, Texas to here in the fall of 2000. That's long ago, y'all. At that time, the closest fertility clinic was in Nashville. And these doctors urged us to start a fresh cycle rather than using that one frozen embryo that we had back in the freezer in San Antonio. Since statistically it's better, the survival rate for a single frozen embryo if it's placed in a mom that's already carried a baby. So we loaded up that one embryo, which we now know as Elliot. We called him Tex at the time. He's from Texas, you know. And we flew him UPS air to the new doctor. Meanwhile, We started another fresh cycle there in Nashville, and this was going to be our final chance. We're now out of money. Another failure, that fresh cycle, but we did still have 6 frozen embryos, including Elliot/Tex, left from that cycle. March 2001, we get news that I'm carrying twins. 3 embryos were transplanted during that cycle, and Samuel and Anna arrived in October 2001 after 3 months of bed rest. The doctors tell us we'll probably never be able to have babies naturally, or probably not even the ones that we've had in storage. Well, August 2002, when the twins were 9 months old, we laughed and cried. Thought I should name him Isaac, but we named him Ben. He's on his way, naturally. So I guess we can have more babies. So a year or so later, it's time for the UPS baby. And we got Elliot. He was born in fall of 2005. At this point, I had 4 babies, ages 3 and under. Okay. Y'all, parenting is hard. At this point, I was tired. I even fell asleep in the Taco Bell drive-thru after they handed me my food. I was tired, and I felt like a failure. How could I have wanted all these babies and now look at how awful I am at this job? A lot of guilt. And so I don't think that infertility struggles necessarily end that day of the delivery. Well, we'll say parenting issues, so that's a whole nother day we could talk about that. So let's go back to the infertility. Christmas 2007, we found out that we were expecting another baby, naturally. But in February, I had a miscarriage on our way to Disney World. It wasn't the happiest place on earth that week. June 2007, we still had 2 embryos in storage from the last batch that had Samuel and Anna. And I saved that chance of having twins again until the end, because if you know Anna, and even though she was in kindergarten at this time, I knew she'd help me raise them. True. On the way to Nashville for that embryo transfer, the doctor called to let us know that one of the embryos had died during the thawing process, but that we could go ahead with the one, and that's Lydia. She arrived February 2008. Now, why do I tell you all this? Remember, statistically, there are several ladies sitting in this room who've gone through this or are going through this. How can you help a sister go through this? Pray. Pray for them. Pray with them. Be sensitive. She may not feel like she's able to throw that baby shower for you. It's not that she's not happy for you. It's just that she's so sad. And she doesn't want to ruin your big day by being a puddle in the floor. Include them. We've got some FOMO. Don't exclude us because we don't have a baby like all of our other friends. We still long for your friendship and to hang out with you. I have up here, don't complain. Believe it or not, I had a friend to say, I can't believe I've got a $400 hospital bill for delivering my baby. Well, I remember thinking, I wish I could only pay $400 and have a baby. When we had the ectopic pregnancy, I had a friend named Dina show up at my door. The knock on the door, and I opened it, and she was standing there holding a single little flower. And she didn't say a word to me. She just handed it to me and hugged me and then got in her car and left. And y'all, that was 20-something years ago, and it still means the world to me. So be there for your friends. Now, what if you're the one who's going through that storm right now? I know you're already praying about it. Go ahead and ask others to pray for you, too. Some of you in this room have family members that prayed with us through our rough time, and it means the world to us. And I jotted down Canterdays and Chandlers. Pray scripture. Pray through the Psalms. I can't tell you how many times I prayed Ephesians 3:20. Lord, I know that you can do more than I could ever ask or imagine. Keep a strong bond with your husband. Don't let this tear you apart. I've seen too many marriages get separated because of infertility. He's hurting for you and with you and for himself. And he feels that financial strain too. Did you know that the average patient ends up spending about $50,000 out of pocket for their fertility treatments? Know that God is with you and that he has plans for you. Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. He has good plans. Study what options that you and your husband have available and hold these options up against God's word. Find someone in the same boat. They know what you're going through. Have coffee with them. Go for a walk with them. And the last is probably the hardest. Find contentment in your situation. Whether you get a yes, a no, or a wait, be content. And I'm still trying to learn this one. And here's my last slide. Here's our family now. I've been blessed with two more daughters this year, Kelsey. She's the bride in the middle. And Ellie in the red at the end, she married Ben 2 months ago. So there's now 9 of us. We got a wait. And just like I said with Abraham and Sarah, that wait has shaped me and my views of God's power in so many ways. He has done so much more than I could ever ask or imagine. And that's all I have, but I'm willing to answer questions if any of y'all have any questions. All right, you can always grab me afterwards too. Thanks, ladies.
Wow. I just think it's so cool how sometimes lessons will correspond together and gel, and you don't even mean for it to happen, but God did. He knew what was going to happen, and he helped lead you to do those lessons. So I appreciate all the work you put into it, but I know that there's so much behind it too that you can't even have time to say. So we feel that. So we just appreciate you sharing what you did. It was awesome. Wonderful, as usual. As it has been. It's been awesome. I just wanted to say also that there were a couple things I've been wanting to say if we had a little bit of time. But one of the things that stuck out to me a couple weeks ago regarding our words was the story that I read when I was going through our science for the week, and it was about crystals. I know nothing about crystals, and I was supposed to teach the kids about crystals. Well, one of the stories that I read was about this scientist who was fascinated with crystals and crystallization, and he would observe water and all the different elements that could crystallize. And you've probably heard this story before, but it just fascinated me, and I thought, this is great. This is awesome for our words. What he discovered was he took water, and he had water in a container in one separate area, and then he had water in a container in another area. And he spent time, which is so funny, but he spent time talking to the water. And he used his words with each water container, but he chose his words carefully. So for this water container, he spoke beautiful words. And he would say, oh, you're the most beautiful water I've ever seen. And I love you, water. You're the greatest. You mean so much to me, water. And he spent hours doing that. And so he just talked to the water molecules. Then he went to the water in another completely different area, to the same water, type of water that came from the same source. He said, you're the ugliest water I've ever seen. I hate you. You're the worst. That just stop being you. Just anything he could think of that was negative. And so then he watched each set of water crystallize. And he tested it, and he observed that the water that he had talked well to crystallized in the most beautiful symmetrical patterns. And the water that he spoke to, ugly, was just asymmetrical. Some of the sides of the crystallization weren't even completely formed. And so he did his test several times, and it was the same exact result every time. And so I talked to the kids about when God says there's power of life and death in the tongue, he actually meant that we are made up of water, and we are going to respond to the words in a form of life or in a form of death. And so we have the power to either make people crystallize symmetrically or asymmetrically. And so I just thought that was just the greatest illustration, you know, to tell our kids and to teach them about, we say be nice and make your words count, and all those verses about words, but I had never thought about it in relation to our actual physical makeup and how it can affect us physically too. So I just wanted to share that story that we had learned and how much it meant to me, so you could pass it along too. But I just want to say again, thank you for that, and I appreciate y'all and love you. And we will sing this song and then spend the rest of our time fellowshipping together. Holy words, long.